Welcome to Appointed.
Well, so many of us were really looking forward to the back end of 2020 and 2021 coming in, and then we got hit with the second wave, and now their vaccines are delayed, and now people are, you know, stuck. We got tons of snow. So we were hoping to kick this season off a bit with some, you know, what are our wish lists? What do we want to see going forward? What would make the future sound a whole lot better, whether it's short term, long term? And so we've asked a number of people, who some of whom we've spoken to before, some of whom have, you know, are very well known, and we want to start with the amazing former Supreme Court judge, former Human Rights High Commissioner, former everything under the sun, and hey, Governor General, is that on your wish list? I'm joined by the amazing Madam Justice Louise Arbour, who's with us, and what would your wish list be?
Well, Kim, I suppose I could call you Kim. Huh? That doesn't disclose the fact that we're really good friends. And listen, this may surprise you, but you know what I would put at the top of my immediate wish list, as in should have been done yesterday, hope it gets done tomorrow, is the release of the so-called two Michaels.
Oh, yeah.
And the reason I put, you know, the fate of Michael Kovrig and Michael Spader at the Spavor, I think is his name, at the top of my list, is because I think we too often think of, you know, big picture items, but saving the life and actually making a pretty existential change in the life of one or two people would already be a massive accomplishment. And I think we need to, you know, as I said, when we look at a new year and all kinds of good wishes, the very immediate ones, I think of this one. I don't want to suggest that it's easy, but I suggest that it's fixable. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the reason it doesn't get fixed is that the right people don't keep their attention on the fate of two people and what it would take to fix it. And I would add to that, this is another one of these cases where sometimes for the sake of grandstanding on grand principles and values, we don't seem to realize that we're putting at risk very, very real people. So it would be absolute top of my list. Fix that. It's fixable. I think there's been a lot of public discussions about that. I think it's largely time to address that. So this would be my number one absolute immediate priority. Mm-hmm. Want to me go down my shopping list, because I could.
Sure. Yeah. Well, and thank you for writing and to leading, being part of a group who led the charge on this. So, thank you for reminding us. Yes.
No, I think it's very mm-hmm. very real. The second thing, now I would move from very specific cases to something that may look more general, but unfortunately we just don't know how big this is, and this would be a call on the government of Canada, and I would say, in addition, very specifically on the government of Quebec, to move towards a broad-based plan of regularization of undocumented migrants.
All right.
The very last big job I held in the UN, so I was sensitized, I think, to these issues. The issue with this, when I say we don't know, we have no idea what the numbers are. I think we know that when in Quebec we talked about the regularization of undocumented migrants who work in the immediate sort of health sector, the so-called guardian angels, that's actually probably very few. Mm-hmm. But when you ask people in the system, how many people do you think live and work in Canada today who don't have a proper regular immigration status? There's some serious people who will tell you could be up to 500,000. Well, if that's anywhere near these kinds of numbers, we need to remember that these people, these are not terrorists, these are not criminals. Mm-hmm. These are people who work, and I think it's, and we've heard the new President Biden at least express the hope of a large regularization exercise in the US. We can do that. We should do that. It's in our economic interest. It's in our values. It's a case where our values match our interest. So I would put that also very, very high on my list.
I'm glad you raised that. One of the shocks I had when I first went into a detention center with one of the MPs was the number of, in particular, women I met who, with adult children, they had lived in Canada all their lives and worked, and then suddenly were discovered to be undocumented, and they were facing the potential of deportation and or always the threat of that, and talked about some of family members who hadn't been picked up yet. So I thank you for raising that, and you're bringing something that I had sort of pushed down in my thinking and memory, but is something that we really need to be focused on.
Yeah, and you know, Kim, I think all your work also has always been very focused on those segments of our communities that are the most neglected, the most vulnerable, the ones who have the least voice, the least capacity to advance their cause, their interests. So this is one of them, I think. Mm-hmm. These people. The third one, I think, will be very close to your heart, would be criminal justice reform, in particular, abandoning these unconscionable mandatory minimum sentences, which I think is long overdue. But I would wrap that up much more broadly into my last two big wishes. So my fourth one would be more broadly, I would love to see Canada launch again a kind of law reform commission like the one that I started my career basically with in the 70s, the Law Reform Commission, with a mandate to examine straight from first principle the criminal justice system, both substantively, procedurally, clean up the criminal code, clean up provision that have been declared unconstitutional by the courts but sit there in print. But more fundamentally, the work that the Law Reform Commission of Canada did in the 70s, that's before the Charter, mm-hmm. actually provided a lot of the fuel for the smart thinking that was done by lawyers and judges under the Charter. So I think it's way overdue that we do that. And I would give it two mandates, one criminal justice and the other one tax. Mm-hmm. I think if we're going to be serious about all kinds of initiatives to start addressing the unconscionable inequalities and inequities in our society, I think that's a starting point. There's a lot of rhetoric about loopholes and tax shelters and so on. This requires, again, a cleanup and then starting from first principle. So these two pillars to me would be fantastic initiatives that the government could launch that would bring us forward medium and longer term in much better position. And then my last one, it's another one of my interests. I would suggest the same kind of thing, a bit different. I would love to see a kind of bipartisan, broad-based political general community coming together to articulate a kind of medium to long-term multilateral foreign policy system for Canada. Something that would transcend the doing and undoing that takes place every time we change government. And that would position Canada in the multilateral system that is now very fragile as a visible, potent player. And it's not going to happen by, you know, making little adjustments on and being all over the place. I think this requires a lot of buy-in, and I'd love to see that. I think that's also very deficient at the time being. Voila.
Wow, fantastic. Okay, I'm on some of them better than others because I must confess I don't have the expertise in some of these areas, but very much support all of these. So thank you so much. Sorry, did I interrupt you though? No.
I was just going to say if we did only half of that, we'd be a better place and we'd be in a better place in the short term.
Absolutely. Well, as always, as my brain was hurting because I was focused on other things, you've got me excited and thinking about new possibilities. So thank you for always being the amazing, courageous, inspirational thinker and doer, most importantly. So this is fantastic. And thank you for kicking us off.
Always a pleasure to talk to you, Kim.
Oh, you too.